జెన్స్ క్యాంటు బాయ్స్ చాట టెక్స్ట్ నెంబర్ 17
భూమిర్ధృప్త నృపా వ్యాజ దైత్యానీకశతాయుతై ఆక్రాంత భూరి భారేణ బ్రహ్మాణం శరణం జయో
are the supreme power personified in the state.
Daitya
of demons.
Anika
of military phalanxes of soldiers.
Shatayutaihi
unlimitedly by many hundreds of thousands.
Akranta
being overburdened.
Bhuri bharena
by a burden of unnecessary fighting power.
Brahmanam
unto Lord Brahma.
Sharanam
take shelter.
Yayav
went. Translation and purpose by His Divine Grace Shri Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada Shri Prabhupada Ki. Once when Mother Earth was overburdened by hundreds of thousands of military phalanxes of various conceited demons, dressed like kings, she approached Lord Brahma for relief. When the world is overburdened by unnecessary military arrangements and when various demoniac kings are the executive heads of the state, this burden causes the appearance of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. As the Lord says in Bhagavad Gita, Tada yada hi dharmasya glani bhavati bharata abhyutthanam adharmasya tadatmanam sijamyaham. Whenever and wherever there is a decline in religious practice, whole descendant of Bharata and the predominant rise of religion, at that time I appear myself. When the residents of this earth become atheistic and godless, they descend to the status of animals like dogs and hogs, and thus their only business is to bark among themselves. This is dharmasya glani, deviation from the goal of life. Human life is meant for attaining the highest perfection of Krishna consciousness. But when people are godless and the presidents or kings are unnecessarily puffed up with military power, their business is to fight and increase the military strength of their different states. Nowadays, therefore, it appears that every state is busy manufacturing atomic weapons to prepare for a third world war. Such preparations are certainly unnecessary. They reflect the false pride of the heads of the state. The real business of a chief executive is to see to the happiness of the mass of people by training them in Krishna consciousness in different divisions of life. Leaders should train the people as brahmanas, kshatriyas, vaishyas and shudras and engage them in various occupational duties, thus helping them progress towards Krishna consciousness. Instead, however, rogues and thieves in the guise of protectors arrange for a voting system and in the name of democracy, they come to power by hook or crook and exploit the citizens. Even long, long ago, asuras, persons devoid of God consciousness, became the heads of state. And now this is happening again. Various states of the world are preoccupied with arranging for military strength. Sometimes they spend 65% of the government's revenue for this purpose. And why should people's hard-earned money be spent in this way? Because of the present world situation, Krishna has descended in the form of the Krishna consciousness movement. This is quite natural, for without the Krishna consciousness movement, the world cannot be peaceful and happy. Once when Mother Earth was overburdened by hundreds of thousands of military phalanxes of various conceited demons, desolate kings, she approached Lord Brahma for relief. A similar verse appears in the prayers of Kunti. There she tells almost the same meaning. What is the verse? Anybody knows? Famous verse. That also she says, Sidantya Bhuri Bharena Bhuvanava Divatana. Bharavataranandhyanje Bhuvanava Yivodado Sidantya Bhuri Bharena. So this is how it begins. Very similar meaning. There Kunti is saying, why the Lord appears in this world? She gives many reasons. One of the reasons she says is, Bharavataranandhanye Bhuvanava Yivodado. This earth sometimes sinks due to the overburden. Just as sometimes a boat sinks in an ocean. Similarly, the earth becomes overburdened by liars and thieves and rogues and atrocious kings. Because of which she is unable to tolerate the weight burden. Then the Lord appears in order to relieve the burden of her. Relieve that burden and so make her feel light. So is her having difficulty carrying those kings or carrying those liars or cheaters or thieves? In fact, earth is carrying huge mountains like Mount Everest and vast oceans like Atlantic Ocean and Pacific Ocean and so many oceans. And all these things are existing on the surface of earth. What makes the weight of these people so heavy for her that she is feeling great burden? Mother Earth cannot tolerate those people who are not living according to the program that Lord has planned for the living entities. Shishi Radha Pindya Gavahanti Shishi Gauritaki. If somebody is a liar, somebody is a thief, or the irresponsible kings, or one who lives against the scriptural intentions. So even if they are less than 50 kilos, still she feels very heavy. She feels that burden far heavier than Mount Everest. Mother Earth cannot tolerate. In fact, Mother Earth is also one of the consorts of the Lord. You see in Tripathi, Sridevi and Bhudevi. Bhudevi is one of the consorts of the Lord. So just as the Lord cannot tolerate atrocity or going against religious principles, similarly, Mother Earth also cannot tolerate. It is said, why the Lord appears in this world? Many times the Lord sends His messengers. Why He sends the messengers? To give some good lessons for the conditioned souls and reclaim them from this world and take them back to Godhead. So Lord wants to keep reminding us why we have come to this material world. By sending His messengers who live a very pure life, who give out teachings and who make the scriptures understandable to us. Like that. But sometimes even after sending the messengers, the Lord finds that the world is still going in the path of degradation. People are going totally against the purpose for which the world was created. Just as sometimes a mother would see a child taking a knife or touching fire, immediately she will come to rescue. Immediately when the Lord also sees that there are leaders in society and there are politicians and kings and executive heads of state misguiding the masses, and the masses are going towards religion, and immediately Lord appears. And the Lord appears to check. So I send a messenger, what's happening? How much recovery is done? How many have been reclaimed? How many are still continuing to suffer? So he wants to take a survey. The Lord himself comes sometimes. Like when he saw, the Lord saw that the Vedas are being rejected. I mean the Vedas are being misused. Then he came as Buddha because so many animals were being killed. So here, in this purport, he is talking about the military phalanxes and wars. What is the cause of wars? Can we stop wars? Is it possible? There is a widespread talk going on all over the world. How can all the continents and all the countries cooperate in such a way that we can completely stop wars? We are not like the barbaric man of the Stone Age, according to them. So they say now we have become civilized and more cultured, educated. So let us have peace summits and put an end to all the wars. No more wars. And they have signed many peace summits. If they call the ancient man to be barbaric, the modern man is a million times more barbaric. What is the proof? The proof is that the military strength is being increased by every country. Prabhupada is saying some countries spend 65% of their country's revenue for military purposes. So man is becoming more sophisticated, is claiming to be more learned. Then why should his animalistic tendencies be entertained so much? Fighting is animal tendency, isn't it? And why is the defense being increased? Is man becoming human from animal or animal to human? Yeah, we can easily ask that question. So what is the cause of wars? Many researchers have studied deeply. Where the war begins? Why? Can't we put an end to wars? How can we make agreement between all the countries? They consider killing to be violent, murder to be very violent. We want to put it off altogether. But the Shastri viewpoint is that the wars cannot be totally stopped. It's not possible. It is necessary for kings to have some military strength to curb the vices in the country, evil elements in the country. Like if there is no king in control to keep law and order in the country, then there are certainly going to be elements like thieves and robbers who will cause harm to the innocent public. This is inevitable. Even in the time of Parikshit Maharaj, there was a Kaliraj who dressed as a king, was beating the cow and bull. And then Parikshit came and took an action on him. So certainly law and order is necessary and military power is necessary. And sometimes there is a need of a Dharma Yudha, like Kurukshetra, in order to destroy all the unwanted elements. Similarly, Parashuram came and killed so many Kshatriya kings who are all ruling the earth, as it is explained here. So sometimes such power is certainly necessary in this world. Wars cannot be totally avoided, but the wars have to be fought for a spiritual purpose or other purpose which will bring good to the world. Wars are not to be fought foolishly for the sake of increasing one's kingdom. In the 12th canto, there is a section called Bhumi Gita. In that Bhumi Gita, Bhumi is laughing at such kings. She is saying, just look at these kings. How foolish they are. They are possessing a small piece of land and claiming it to be their own. This state belongs to me. This country belongs to me. And they are fighting with other kings. Sometimes the father and son. Sometimes brother and brother. They kill one another. They murder one another. And they are shouting at one another, this is mine, you rascal, you fool. It doesn't belong to you. Get out of this zone. Get out of this place. So in this way they are having big fights among themselves. And Bhumi Gita says, these are simply like play toys in my hands. These people, these kings are going to depart from this world exactly in the same helpless way in which they entered into this world. Like you have seen a child, how in a helpless way a child is born, raising the hands and legs. And you see an old man also like that, isn't it, in the deathbed. The old man also is, you know, his body is shivering, you know, holding a stick. Similarly, these kings will depart from this world the same way as they came in. In fact, many of these kings, they, she says, try to control their mind and senses and gradually acquire power and opulence and control over others. Why? So that they don't have to hear any advice of their ministers. Because the minister's advice acts like pinpricks for the kings. Why do the ministers give me such advice? Good advice. I want to act whimsically. So kings want to act whimsically. So they want to gain control over practically everyone and everything. In fact, she says, they are not satisfied with the kingdom they have. And they even want to go to the oceans and go beyond the oceans. And in this way, capture as much land as possible and as much treasury as possible they want to own. In this way, they want to increase their name and fame and prowess. So this mamata, or mind, the I am mind tendency, is the one which causes this kind of greed for possessing more and more. So two things, I and mind. I leads to lust and mind leads to desire for proprietorship, greed. Rasa Krishna says, both are Bhoktaram Yakitapasam Sarvalokam Aishwaram. He says, you are not the enjoyer, Krishna says, I am the enjoyer. You are not the proprietor, I am the proprietor, he says. So one who thinks, I am all in all, everything is revolving around me, such a person becomes lusty. I want only that thing. And it is meant for me only. One feels like that. One time, when Jayadratha was passing through the forest to meet the King Shalva to get married to his daughter. He was going with his son Kotika in his chariot. And all of a sudden, it was Kamyakavan, he saw Draupadi plucking some flowers from some plants. From a distance, when he saw the dark beauty of Draupadi, he became captivated. Immediately he sent his son Kotika, go there and find out who is that beautiful lady. Is she Apsara or daughter of some demigod? Find out details and come immediately. Then the son Kotika approached her, just as a jackal would approach a tigress. He slowly went near her to find out the details about her. And Kotika told her, my dear beautiful lady, here is the king of Sindhu and Savira, who is now marching exactly like Indra amidst the Maruts. And he is heading a team of 600 chariots. And he has gazed upon you, and that is a good fortune. When she heard it, Draupadi, immediately she stepped back and pulled the cloth over her head. And she said, a woman should never speak to a man in a private place. But still I will tell you, understand that I am the daughter of King Dripada and I am the wife of the five great heroic Pandava brothers. Go and tell your king. So Kotika returned back to the king and said, Father, this is what she is saying. But then Jayadratha was too lusty. When one thinks I am the enjoyer, when one is lusty, one cannot control oneself. He said, although I was going to marry the daughter of Shalva, now I have totally dismissed that idea. I want to marry only this lady. He said, after looking at this girl, all the other women look like monkeys for me. I have no desire to marry anybody else. What can we do? He asked. Then the son said, my dear father, I don't think she is going to accompany you any time. It's better for you to take her by force. There is no other way. And Jayadratha got on from his chariot along with this. Many of the soldiers and ministers, he approached the cottage. And she had already gone to the cottage. And she stared at him sharply. And Jayadratha said, oh queen, how is everything? Is all well? Everything is going on well? How are your husbands? How is life? Yes. She said, everything is well. She said, there is some water kept there. Please take some water from the pitcher and you wash your leg. And please be seated there. and my husband will return very soon, Yudhishthira and others, and they will give you a befitting reception. So kindly say something. So he said, I have not come here for food or drink, my dear lady. I have come to take you with us. And he said, why are you living with these Pandavas who are forest dwellers? They have been banished from the kingdom. They have lost all their luster. And they are living like forest dwellers in the forest. Now, why do you live with these poverty stricken men who are already fallen? Yeah, a woman should never live with a fallen husband. You accompany us and I will make you the queen of Sindhu and Savira. In this way, you can live in the midst of gold and silver and hundreds of servant maids serving you. Come with me. She became wild. She said, who will speak so ill of virtuous men who are performing severe austerities and penances and who are impoverished? Only dogs will speak like this, she said. So indirectly she told the friend, Prabhupada says you are dogs and horses. She called him a dog. She said that the Pandavas, even celestials cannot fight with them. Even celestials cannot defeat them. Every one of them is like a lion. They are far greater than even Indra. And you are talking ill of them like this? And that too to a woman who is alone at home. And she said, just wait and see, when the furious Bhima comes, you will not know which direction to flee. When Arjuna turns back, you will run for your life. So she warned him like that. And she was very severe. She is a Kshatriya lady. She was very severe. She said, your attempt to talk to me like this or deal with my husband like this is exactly like someone trying to pluck off hair in the face of a sleeping lion. You can imagine what will the lion do. But Jayadratha was determined. Because when one is lusty, then one becomes blinded by attachment. He was determined. Although she was left under the care and custody of Daumya Rishi, still he pulled her, took her on his chariot, and Daumya Rishi immediately came and admonished him, chastised him. But he said, you can never, first of all, one can never touch a woman who is married. But if she is not married, then you can win her hand by defeating the opponents. But what you are doing is not at all according to religion. So he was a Brahmana, what can he do? He was running behind the chariot along with all the soldiers and everyone. Of course, very soon, the Pandavas in the forest, they came to know that. And they were chasing behind, and when Jayadratha saw them at a distance, far away, he became frightened. He asked Draupadi, oh, are those people your husbands? They are the same ones? He asked. She laughed at him. He said, now it is too late for you to ask about them. Then he asked her, who are they? Then she said, anyway, because you are asking, I will tell you who is who. That person, with a flag, having the kettle drums, and who is golden in hue, and who is thin and tall, who has big eyes and a raised nose, he is the most saintly Yudhishthira. Even now it's not too late for you. Drop your weapons and fall at his feet and seek forgiveness. He is very famous for giving mercy to even the enemies who take his shelter. Better he go and take his shelter, she said. And the one on his left, you find one who is as tall as a salt tree and who appears very ferocious. He is Bhima. He has no habit of arguing anyone. He has faced defeat never in his life. And he is angry. When he becomes angry, the whole earth will tremble. And then she said, on the right of Yudhishthira is the most fierce Arjuna, whom even celestials fear. And he has never lost a battle ever before. And he is most virtuous and always follows the words of his elder brother Yudhishthira. And behind them are the great sword fighters Nakula and Sahadeva, who are most religious. For the sake of religious principles, they will even enter fire. So virtuous are they. And all of them have come. Now you have to flee for your life, she said. And Jayadratha saw all the armies. When Bhima came, he was so furious, he came to know what had happened to Draupadi. He was cutting off the army just like a wheat field or a paddy field, somebody severing, like muscle can be removed. It's like he was cutting them off like anything. And Bhima came forward and he saw Jayadratha and he knocked off his horses broke his chariot into pieces, and Jayadrath jumped out of the chariot and started running away. He started fleeing into the forest. And very soon Arjuna and Bhima, they finished most of the army. Most of them died and the others were running, and Bhima was running behind them. Arjuna scolded Bhima. What are you doing? People are running for their lives and you are running behind them. Foolishness. Leave them. And he said, it's better for you to find out where is Jayadrath. So, in this way, later on, of course, Jayadrath was arrested and brought in front of Yudhishthira, and he had to kneel down, and Bhima cut off his hair, leaving only 5 tufts of hair on his head. He was humiliated. Now we see in this example how a Kshatriya is supposed to give protection to women. Actually, Kshatriya is supposed to give protection to 5 kinds of people. Women, children, old men, cows, and the Brahmins. Here in Jayadrath's case we find, instead of giving protection to women, he is exploiting women, exploiting another man's wife. And a Brahmana, Bhamya, is begging him and is ignoring a Brahman. Can you see that? So sometimes Kshatriyas can fall prey to their lust like this. When they fall prey to their lust, they may not hear the words of Brahmans and they will invite danger in their own lives. Like we find Ravana did the same thing. Or Duryodhana. Because Duryodhana insulted Draupadi, that was the cause of the whole Kurukshetra war. Crores of soldiers were killed in the Kurukshetra war because Duryodhana insulted a woman. So Kshatriya is suddenly given some powers to use. But when they misuse the powers, then the very same post and position and power which they achieved can be the cause of their destruction. It can totally destroy them. That's why Bhumi Gita is laughing at them. These people who are very proud of possessing powers, they are very politically motivated. They are thinking, who is bigger than me? Who is smarter than me? I possess this, I will possess that also. And they don't mind murdering their own brothers or their own fathers. Like, you know, this Aurangzeb. He put his father in the jail and he killed all his brothers. For the sake of post and position. For the sake of being a king all alone like that. So, here it is being spoken that how the earth becomes overburdened by such kings who are fighting unnecessarily owing to lust and greed. Greed is the sole cause for increasing one's kingdom. When a king is not fighting for dharma yudha, dharma, then greed is the cause for increasing his kingdom. Such people are considered thieves by Mother Earth. Just like once Alexander, when he was entering into the frontiers of India, they had put up tents all over. And one thief had some or other sneaked into one of the tents and he was stealing gold and silver and everything. And Alexander was about to sleep and his soldiers immediately brought the thief in front of him, caught him and brought him. He said, sir, he has entered your tent and he was stealing gold and silver from your tent. Alexander was so furious, he said, how dare you enter my tent? He said, cut off his head. And the thief was very angry also. He said, no, nobody can cut off my head, he said. And Alexander asked, what do you mean? You are a thief and you are captured now, red-handed, and you deserve to be cut off. You deserve to be killed. Why can't we kill you? You want to say anything as the last word of your life? And the thief said, I am a small thief, but you are a far bigger thief, he said. And Alexander was surprised, how is it? And the thief said, you see, I came to steal some little bit of gold and silver. You have come to steal the whole country. You want to dominate the whole country and subjugate the whole country. So you are a much bigger thief, he said. So that is why Mother Earth is calling them as thieves. Now, the wars between the people which come, what is the cause of that? That's where we began. Is it only the greed? Prabhupada explains, one time when Steve Goldsmith was speaking, in one of his conversations with Prabhupada, he was telling, Swamiji, we have heard that people who suppress their desires and are not allowed to enjoy sex freely, later on they become venomous and they become the cause of wars. Prabhupada said, no, cause of wars is not suppression of sex. Cause of war is enjoying illicit sex, he said. What is the cause of war? When one wants to enjoy illicit sex, that leads to wars. You see, now Jayadrath wanted to enjoy illicitly. That led to war. Ravana wanted to enjoy illicitly. That's what the Ramayana came up, isn't it? All the wars, they come from when a man gives up his religious principles, wants to enjoy illicitly, then the wars come. And Baba said, wars also come because of slaughter, he said. When man slaughters animals in thousands by organized slaughterhouses, then that leads to wars, he said. One may be surprised, what is the connection between war and slaughtering of animals? One may wonder. Prabhupada explained that sometimes in a classroom, a teacher would call two children and tell them to catch each other's ears. You catch his ear and he catches your ears, and then go up and down. Stand up, sit down. Stand up, sit down. Like that. In the same way, when the Lord sees that all the living entities are mischievous, envious of one another, in this way they are slaughtering animals in large numbers, and the Lord wants to punish them, then he creates a war between two countries. And then in that war, what happens? Whatever Kumar Lord wanted to punish, they all are killed. Both the parties kill one another. And they die. Like that. So wars are actually caused by such organized slaughter of innocent animals, purpose. In this way, a king, even in the ancient times, not only in the modern times, even in ancient times such things existed, can misuse his power. Like Shakti Paresham Paripidanaya, it is said. Everyone, a Brahmana, can misuse his power by becoming proud, or by becoming very thinking of oneself to be very great, that one can argue. One is a Digvijay Pandit. Or a Kshatriya can become proud, thinking that I have so much power, I can exploit women, I can exploit children. Even Ashwatthama, although Ashwatthama is a Brahmana by birth, but he acted as in the capacity of a Kshatriya. So we can, for all practical purposes, we can take him as a Kshatriya who is fighting, just like Dronacharya. Then he saw at one time that Duryodhana is totally knocked off, he's fallen on the ground now, the war has ended now. In fact, Duryodhana was almost at the verge of death. That even beasts and dogs and other animals, they were surrounding his body. It was almost close to death. When Ashwatthama saw this, he felt so angry on one hand and so sorry on the other. He was telling Duryodhana, just look at you, the king whose head is supposed to be decorated with a beautiful golden crown, and who is supposed to be surrounded by people carrying white umbrella and wrists, chamara, and with the helmet and everything, walking majestically. Such a king is now fallen on the ground, and licking the dust of the ground. Just see your condition. See the faith. And Duryodhana heard it, he said, Ashwatthama, everyone has to die one day. Ultimately, destiny will come in everyone's life and everyone has to die one day. What can be done? Now we have almost lost, he was telling. When Ashwatthama heard it, he said, no, we haven't lost. We still stand a chance. And he said, now, just wait and see, in tomorrow's war, I will finish all of them, all the Pandavas' side. And Duryodhana didn't feel very confident, but still he told Kripacharya, okay, Kripacharya, you make him the commander-in-chief tomorrow, and give him an opportunity, let us see. Even if I can, before I take my last breath, if somebody can defeat the Pandavas, I'll certainly be happy and I'll die happily. He said. But then Ashwatthama's plan was different. He took Kripacharya by side and he told him that, you know, I don't see any way to kill the Pandavas in a fair way. We have to certainly employ some diplomacy. And he consulted with him and said, and while all of them are asleep, let us go and cut off their heads. Let us enter and enter the Pandavas' tent and finish all of them. That was his plan. And Kripacharya did not agree with that. He was actually Kripacharya's nephew. Kripacharya told them, you see, there are two things. There is endeavor and destiny. If one does not endeavor at all, then destiny will overpower a person, and in this way one will be defeated, and such a person is considered irresponsible. And we have put all of our endeavor. Even after endeavoring in the best possible way, we were defeated in the war. I am sure that is because of foolish Duryodhana, who never followed the path of virtue. And he turned against even Krishna and all the Pandavas. And now we are in this position, and we have to follow the for the sorrow. What can be done? And sometimes even after a lot of endeavor, the destiny overpowers us and nothing can be done. So it's better for us to fight fairly tomorrow and lose our lives, rather than to go into the tents and fight in the night while everyone is asleep. So Dhrupada was not agreeing. But Ashwatthama was bent upon fighting even alone, if none of them would accompany him. So he entered into the Pandava tents and he killed Dhrishtadyumna when he was asleep. Actually, Dhrishtadyumna got up. When he was about to kill him, Dhrishtadyumna immediately jumped up and said, "I would be very happy to be killed with you. You kill me." He had no weapons in hand. Dhrishtadyumna told him, opening both hands, he said, "Kill me. I will not die like a slave, but I will die like a great warrior. You kill me," he said. And then he attained a courageous death. Dhrishtadyumna. And all the other Pandavas were supposed to be inside the tent, and he went inside. With a raised sword in hand, he cut off the heads of all the Pandavas. And while returning, he thought that maybe I should show something to Duryodhana that I have killed them, so that Duryodhana may again get back his life, assimilate some strength. So he took all the heads. Then when he came out, he realized, oh, these are not the heads of Pandavas. These are the children of Pandavas. And he realized his folly. And Pandavas had really left elsewhere. They had gone somewhere else because the war had ended already. So then he thought, what can I say? Anyway, let me go and tell a lie to Duryodhana. But these are the heads of Pandavas. So I want to give him life. I want to give him happiness. So he took the heads to Duryodhana. And he kept them on the chariot and told Duryodhana, "Now Duryodhana, now the war is won. We have emerged victorious." He said, "I have finished all of them," he said. But Duryodhana could not believe. "Really?" He asked him. "The proof is that I have brought all the heads," he said. And he gave all the heads and put it on the side of Duryodhana. And Duryodhana, although he was very weak, on the verge of death, he extended his hand, stretched his hand out, and he touched the skull and started crushing the skulls with his hand, with a great force. And he found the skulls were getting crushed. And they were soft. He said, "Oh foolish Ashwatthama, these are not Pandavas. The Pandavas skulls are like iron. I know that very well. These are the skulls of the Pandava children. What a foolish act you have done." Even Duryodhana felt it was foolish. And Duryodhana was not happy. Because it's not according to religious principles, killing such children. So Kshatriya can never mistreat a woman or kill children. And the same way mistreat old people, cows and Brahmins. Kshatriya is supposed to protect. But the scriptures explain, time to time, even on the surface of the earth, such kings appear who will act irreligiously. Like King Vena. He was telling the Brahmins, "Why are you worshipping the Devadas and why are you worshipping the Supreme Lord? I am supposed to be worshipped. Don't you know? The Shastra says that king is Naradev, which means king is God. So I am the actual God. And all of you should be worshipping me. And all Brahmanas have become like unchaste wives. They are worshipping the Devadas and worshipping Vishnu." This was his contention. That's what he was telling Brahmins. And he ordered all his soldiers, "Go and stop all the yajna and all puja. Nothing should happen. Everyone should worship only me." That was his demand. The Brahmanas tried to make him understand. But all their attempts was of no avail. So that is King Vena. And kings like this, when they come to power, they certainly do just the opposite of what a king is supposed to do. A king is supposed to take tax from the public and use it all for their well-being. It's like a sun absorbs water and gives it back as rain. Similarly, a king should take all the taxes from the people, and people should give the taxes voluntarily, happily, not try to find out some schemes by which they can escape from income tax. People should be happily giving the king. And when will they give? When the king is serving the people by building temples, by keeping sanitation conditions, by doing welfare work for the people like that. But a king whose atrocious may take all the wealth, and he may be decorating the beautiful queens, and he may be increasing his number of queens for his own enjoyment. The atrocious king. That's what a person will do. A king is allowed to marry more than one wife, but in a righteous way. A king is not allowed to steal another man's wife. That is never permitted in the Shastra. Even if he is very chivalrous, still. Even if he is far more powerful, it's never allowed. But one is allowed to marry more wives, and he can expand his kingdom if he wants. But one can take all the wealth of the public and misuse it like that. Or one may become proud of his power. And simply because he is proud, he may want to go to another country and expand his kingdom. Just like Nawab Hussain Shah, he wanted to go to Orissa and fight with Pratap Rudra. Sanatana Goswami was very unhappy. And he heard it. He said, Pratap Rudra is a righteous king, he is a Rajarshi. Why should you fight with Orissa? What would you gain by that? He is ruling his kingdom properly. Why are you so greedy to increase your kingdom? So, in this way, the greed of the kings for expanding their kingdom and enjoying themselves, ignoring the public, welfare of the public, is not uncommon. And when such kings come to power, then Brahmanas will dethrone them. They will do that. Just as they did with Vena. And later on, Krishna himself assisted in doing that with Duryodhana. Because that cannot be tolerated. Because ultimately, you see, the Shastras are concerned about God, as well as Shastras, as well as the Brahmanas, they are concerned about one thing, which is the welfare, especially the spiritual welfare of the public. When Parikshit was born, at the time, the Jyotishis, those who are astrologers, they were saying many things about Parikshit, about his birth and activities. Towards the end, they were also telling, after talking Parikshit's glories, they said that this boy, at the end of his life, will die by being bitten by a serpent toward the end of his life. That never bothered Yudhishthira at all, even a bit. And Yudhishthira was hearing all the reports given by the astrologers. He only wanted to know how this boy will live as a king and serve the people. When he heard that he's going to die like this, that's no problem. No. Anyway, he's going to die one day. Everyone has to die in this world one day. Whether you die by being bitten by serpent or bitten by scorpions or pain like scorpions, whatever. Everyone has to die. But he was more concerned about, he told, tell me how he is going to live. Is he going to live a righteous life or is he going to be a wretch, sinful wretch? That is more important. If he is living a righteous life, serving the people, then that's it. That means, kings like Yudhishthira, they all lived only for the welfare of the praja. And how to make the praja Krishna conscious. That was their only goal. And once they have lived a righteous life and given the people what is due, then they worry about the future. Let us have another king who will take this responsibility and rule in the same righteous way. Let the world, the whole world be Krishna conscious like that. And they would never bother about themselves at all. They would never worry about them. As Papa says here, a leader should train the people as Brahmacharya Vaishishudra and engage them in various occupational duties, thus helping them progress towards Krishna consciousness. So a leader, who is a leader? Here we are talking about kings. But the Shastras are also applicable in everyone's life. Everyone who takes responsibility as mother and father, they are leaders. If somebody is a department head, somebody is a counselor, somebody is a president, and somebody is a guru, or somebody is a senior, they all are put in position of being a leader in guiding people. So whenever we are put in a position where there are certain dependents put under our custody, then immediately the responsibility follows us at once. Prabhupada writes in Bhagavad Gita also in that verse, Evam Parampara Prapanam Rajarshi Vidhu. He writes that the executive heads of states or the kings or any leader, they should be well versed with Shastras and what the Shastras want them to do and what want others to do. So that whenever people come to us for advice, we will be able to give them good piece of advice and train them and raise them in Krishna consciousness. So it's the duty of every leader. And just as we were talking about the kings, it is said in the 12th canto, what would happen to the kings? The kings will become simply thieves, looting the property of the public. And the public would be so fearful, not able to protect their own wives and the property. The public would run into the forest. It is said at the end of Kali Yuga. People would run into the forest because kings can't give protection. There will be so much thievery and robbery going all over the country. And the kings would be enjoying their position, looting the property of the public like that. That would be the condition at the end of Kali Yuga, when Lord Kalki will come to destroy the simple people like that. In the same way, If we are given position, along with the position comes facilities. Facilities come in two ways. One is our ability to command control over certain people and things, isn't it? We have the freedom to command control over many people when we are put in some position. And also many gifts come, facilities come, profits come, along with somebody holding a particular post. Now when a person makes a decision, like when a leader makes a decision, one has to know that for a leader to make a decision is very easy. He can just make a decision and hand it over. But then how will it affect the subordinates? That is most important. Just as King Pratapudra had told his son, in that case of Gopinath Patnaik's pastime, he told his son, whatever is fit, whatever you deem fit, you do that and get the money back, governmental money back. So his son decided that I will put Gopinath Patnaik in a Changa, like that. Just imagine, king can give order very easily, but the subordinates, how will they suffer? In intense. In the shoes of Praja. One should be able to be sensitive to the needs and the wants of the population, of the populace. It is the duty of a king. In the same way, the duty of any leader. They should be able to understand the needs of the subordinates when one is put in a position. What are the needs? They need to be trained spiritually, most important of all. Without spiritual training, no one can have the eyes to see what is right and what is wrong. So first of all, we have to give them the eyes. But even in the process of giving the eyes of wisdom to them, they still may be immature and will need guidance, constant guidance and supervision and encouragement. They need that. And that kind of support is expected from every leader. There are smaller leaders, bigger leaders, very big leaders. Everyone is supposed to give care, guidance and support and encouragement. And then when one grows, then everyone will evolve to a stage when they will also become leaders. They will have their eyes wide open. They can see things, tell you what is right, what is wrong. At the same time, one should not misuse the facilities that come along with position. One should not misuse. Just because we have power, we cannot exercise the power and come down on weaklings. People below us are weaklings. And just because we are offered the power, we cannot show the eagerness to exercise that power on weaklings and subject them to great suffering. Just as Indra did. Indra, when he saw that he was not respected by the Vrajavasis, what did he do? Immediately he sent forth the Samvartaka clouds. And he told the Samvartaka clouds that you go over Vrindavan and you pour down so that the animals will be killed. Even the cows and calves will be killed. All the Vrajavasis will flee here and there. You subject them to suffering. The order like that. So he was deriving pleasure in aggression. In aggression and subjecting them to pain in order for maintaining his own position and prestige like that. So, of course, it's the duty of the king to take action, a disciplinary action on those who are thieves or rogues or those who are mischievous, who are misbehaving with women in society. It's not that a king should never be violent. Some people say that, no, you should always be merciful. Of course, king is merciful. Like Parikshit is most merciful king in the lineage of Pandavas. No? But then, the very same Parikshit, you know, he removed his sword when he saw the Shudra mistreating a cow. Similarly, like Jayadratha was mistreating a woman, and you know what punishment he got. So, it's the duty of the king to show violence where it is needed and take action like that. That one should not use power like Indra used his power. Indra wanted to kill the Vrajavasis, kill the cows and calves and show that because all of you Vrajavasis didn't offer me puja and you obeyed Krishna, so this is the way I will show my power to you. In this way, when we are put in a senior position, leadership position, we have the power to do anything we want. And weaklings are weaklings. People who are below us are weaklings. And one should not misuse one's power. In the same way, one should not enjoy the gifts and facilities that come for one's own sake. Prabhupada explains, even a guru is like a viceroy. Prabhupada says, viceroy, in those days in India, the viceroy will be getting many gifts, you know, jewels and pearls and rubies, you know, gold. People would go and meet them and give them. But viceroy cannot take it for himself. He is supposed to accept it and give it to the British government, like that. Same way, Guru also accepts many gifts, many things from different people, but then he gives it all to Krishna's service. He doesn't enjoy that. So sometimes we have a desire to enjoy that which comes to us. Then we become opaque. You know, then we take the facilities and we enjoy ourselves. Also, when we accept gifts from people, it's our duty to return back the same gifts in a different way. We become obliged. Like you go to somebody's house, if I eat some prasad, then I have to do some kirtan there. After eating prasad, then I have fulfilled my obligation to them. The brahmana, not only brahmana, everyone, whoever accepts anything, immediately we become obliged. Somebody gives a gift to us. Even if they give you a greeting card on your birthday, then you become obliged to them. Then you have to give them kind words to them. You have to remember to reciprocate with them. Like that. So a leader should not accept gifts and facilities and luxuries just for enjoying oneself. One should always see, either should be utilized in Krishna service or should be given up in charity. One should not, the greed element can come. When one enjoys too much, then one can become greedy. Just as we are talking about the kings trying to own more and more, similarly we can also become greedy to own more and more and possess more and more. And the more we possess, then what will happen? Then we get used to luxuries. Like, you know, if we are used to having a lot of luxuries in our life, then later on when we don't have them, we will not be grateful. We will curse God. We will curse people around us. But if you learn to live a simple life, even as a senior, even as a leader, then we will always be happy. If somebody gives us facility, we will always be grateful to them. So one should not exploit and enjoy like that. Similarly, what to speak of kings? A king is a kshatriya and is a mode of fashion. So naturally, if he is not always guided by a brahmana all the time, then there's a likelihood of his passion coming to surface. When the passion is surfacing, then naturally he may become greedy for posts and positions. He may be political, he may be diplomatic, he may try to pull somebody, and he may do all that without the advice of a minister, a brahmana minister like that. But as far as leadership in our society is concerned, as Vaishnavas, Vaishnavas are supposed to be completely non-political. One has to be innocent. It is said once Krishna's friend was telling, he was telling one of the boys, one of his boys, we were talking to him, he was telling, that you have completely lost your innocence. Now you should have put you in Brahmachari training, he was telling, for 2 to 3 years. You absolutely have lost your innocence, he was telling. So then I asked him, what is the connection? Then he said, Brahmachari Gurukule Vasandanta Guru Hitam Asanam Dasavan Nicho Guru Spirit. He said, if one lives as a brahmachari in the ashram and is strictly following the injunctions of the shastra, then he can become totally innocent, he said. He can be pure like a child. Then he gave explanation to that how. Guru. Whatever gifts he gets, he gives it to Guru. Acharan Dasavan Nicho. He simply lives like a servant and is keeping distance from women. And is always treating all women as mothers. And he has no need of being political for any position or name or fame because he's a servant. Servant after nature, he does menial services. And in this way he said, although he has his senses well developed, mind and senses intelligence well developed, because he has kept himself under the custody of the Guru and is totally submitted himself to Guru, such a person can be pure and innocent. And he said it is important for one to maintain that innocence. Because if you don't maintain that innocence, especially I'm talking about brahmacharis, and even other devotees, if you become diplomatic, if you become political, be many times imagine dangers. has some great victory. You will think that now I have done. Now you will think you are like a king, you achieved some province. You think like that. You tend to think like that. Actually, we don't have a crown, not even a kundal, nor are we having a sword in hand. But those tendencies are there. They are all invisible, although we don't have them. Yeah, they are invisible. We don't have a horse, we don't have a chariot. But we may be in that mood. Just as a very advanced Vaishnava is in the mood of a servant. Similarly, a neophyte Vaishnava or a neophyte Vaishnavi may be in the mood of a king or a queen. They may be imagining so many things about themselves which are actually not true. So when we are imagining ourselves to be king or queen, then such a tendency has come up. And actually when we look at others, the competitive mentality comes. I have to be that one supreme, one unparalleled, appreciated for such and such service. For cooking, or for cleaning, or for book distribution, or for preaching, or for any activity like that. So again that I and mine comes, that aham and mamakar, ahankar and mamakar. Very, very dangerous. If you are put in a post, we have to know that we are posted in a particular position only for the sake of organizing and enhancing a particular service. Like in a society like ISKCON, we can say that all are equal, all are Vaishnavas. In fact, some of the junior devotees may be most advanced. They must have done a lot in their previous lives. So in one sense, everyone is equal. Everyone is a spirit soul. Nitya Nityanam, Chetana Chetanam, Yeko Bhuvanam. There is only one Yeko, not two. No. Not Krishna and me. Krishna and me and all others. Not like that. Krishna and all others. Where am I in that? Am I in Krishna or am I in others? So I am also in others. So Krishna is one supreme. And I am also one amongst other. Nitya Nityanam, Chetana Chetanam, Yeko Bhuvanam. So I am also in Bhuvanam only. So we are not along with Krishna sitting in a high position. So we have to always remember that we are servants. And a post or position is given to facilitate activity. So you give a post, it becomes very easy. You make somebody department head, you make somebody service authority, you make somebody a counselor. And the activities become organized, it becomes easy for rendering service to Krishna. So we have to know that this is a facility created for rendering service and not for self-aggrandizement or for claiming oneself to be great or for fighting for position and fame. Am I great or you are great? How many followers I am having? How many followers you have? Like when I was in my company, I openly saw managers. So all managers are counting. You know, that person, you know, he always, in the meetings I have seen, he's always favorable to me. This person also, he comes and drinks chai with me. And this person, he calls me for his parties. So this way they will be counting how many followers I have and how many followers that person has. So they count in terms of number of followers and think of, I am great or he is great like that. It's very, very, actually these are the ones which create the competitive mentality. These are my people, these are his people, these are her people. So because of that we become politically minded and we try to assassinate the character of a Vaishnava. If we can, Vaishnava or Vaishnavi, we will do that. And then that will bring about our own downfall in spiritual life. We will not, our heart will not be nourished in Krishna consciousness. Rather, our heart will become dried up, just like it happened to Ramachandra Puri. And one cannot practice Krishna consciousness blissfully. So our society is a spiritual society. So just as Prabhupada is talking about the kings here, who became a burden on earth, so we can also become a burden on our society. There are some people who have become a burden on our society now. So those people have enjoyed a lot of wealth of the society. Like recently, Gopakrishna Maharaj came to Pune, he was selling that in ISKCON, the position they have given for president is so great that once you post a person, removing a person is very difficult. So there are one or two people in ISKCON society who have assumed the role of presidents, but they are taking the wealth of the society and printing books on Ritvik philosophy, bogus philosophy, and misusing Krishna's money. And when you try to remove them, they go to court, and they're trying to be seated in that position and they are doing a lot of atrocious activities. So such people are certainly a burden to our society. Just as me is talking about somebody being a burden. Why a burden? Because they are taking Krishna's money and using it for a wrong purpose. and they are propagating a bogus philosophy even within the society, creating a lack of faith in people, creating disturbance in people's minds, breaking the faith of people and discouraging people from becoming Krishna conscious. This is actually violence, and Krishna will not tolerate it. Krishna will certainly take an action on such people. So we should always ask ourselves, by my lifestyle, am I becoming a burden on ISKCON society, or a parasite on ISKCON society, or am I becoming a very useful tool in Srila Prabhupada's hands to bring Krishna to the world? So we can ask ourselves. So certainly we have one element in us which is a burden element. Another part of us certainly is contributing to the society. So we have to give up such qualities that are mentioned here. Like the Bhumi Gita was laughing. That laughter is meaningful laughter. We have to know that, you know, we don't possess anything. We don't possess anybody. You know, it's all for the sake of service that is given to us. Like, you know, say I am calling myself a president of Pune, and say all of you know that I am president of Pune. So amongst you, say if I am boasting myself, I am president, it may be all right. Now when I go out, who knows I am president of Pune? You just walk 1 inch out of this gate. Nobody knows you are president. And most often people give respect to you or people honor you based on external appearances. And people see, here is a mendicant, you know, wearing a sadhu's dress and having a shaven head. And people see us in trains or buses. We go wherever we go. People just would treat us like any other normal person. And it wouldn't make any difference for them. Probably there would be people ridiculing at us. Once I saw a mother with a child. Child was crying like anything. She said, "Hey, if you cry too much, I'll hand you over to the booth," she said. And she was showing the brahmacharis. Two of us were there. "I'll hand you over to that person." And the child was crying and tears were coming in the eyes, and he turned around and looked, you know. And became even more upright. I was crying even more. Seeing our shaven heads, you know. So we are used as a booth for the mothers. Although we may be presidents of temples. Yeah. So we have to laugh at ourselves. All this post and position given to us, simply meaningless. Be a counselor, you are a department head, you are a president. No, people, outside people, nobody knows about. Actually, this, we have to see from a global view. If you take an aerial view, this is a small, like Prabhupada was telling once to Tamalakshmi Maharaj, was speaking, then there was Los Angeles, I think. He was telling that, you know, this Los Angeles, he was selling this temple. No, he was selling Mahavishnu. It began from Mahavishnu, I think. He was selling Mahavishnu, was exhaling and inhaling, and you know, all the universes are coming from his body, and in that universe, you know, there are millions of universes coming. In that universe, you know, there are millions of planets, and in each planet there are so many inhabitants, and there is a planet called Earth, and that planet there is a small country called America, the small country, there is a small city called Los Angeles. In that small Los Angeles city, there's a small temple in ISKCON. And the small temple, in one corner of the temple, in one room, there's a small devotee. He was selling like you, he was selling. And he said, and he thinks. So something like that he was selling. So if we learn to look at our own insignificance, we will never become proud. There is no question of becoming proud. And also, one should become attached to post and position. Like the kings, they were attached to their, these kings are attached to position as well as exploiting people and things which come along with the position. So one should avoid both. One should not exploit people and things. Rather, one should use all the things for benefiting the people by being a servant. That's first thing. And secondly, one should not be attached. One should be able to give up at any time. When Prabhupada was leaving the planet, completing his pastimes, he said, "Kuch ichha nahi," he said. "I don't have any disease. I'm not carrying any disease to be born again." He said, "Now whatever I wanted to do, I have done it. These are the things I wanted to do and I have done it." And Prabhupada was very confident. And he wanted others to take up charge and run the movement very wonderfully. He gave them advice and he did like that. So many a times, like we even within ISKCON, when you change a person from one department to another department, my Lord, it's a big shock for a person. A person has been in a department for a long time, one gets attached to the department, attached to that particular kind of activities, and it becomes very difficult for a person when one changes. So in certain temples, that's why they keep rotating a person from different departments, so that one learns all different services and different activities. At the same time, doesn't become attached and become a spoiled child. We should not become a spoiled child like Indra. See, Indra was given offerings by Vrijavasi, and he was accepting year after year. But then 1 year when they didn't give, just see how it became. Similarly, as seniors, we are getting the respects of so many juniors. So many are bowing down at us, and they look at us, they bow down. So we are used to getting many bow downs. And it's very, very dangerous. Because looking at so many people bowing down to us, that's why in Swarup Damodar, when he accepted sannyas from a sannyas guru, he got the name Swarup that time. Swarup means when one takes sannyas, one is given a name, new name, and that he got the name Swarup. And Mahaprabhu gave him the name Damodar. So became Swarup Damodar. They are supposed to do certain things. They, you know, cut off the top hair, and they cut off the sacred thread. But they are also supposed to accept certain things like danda and the saffron dress. But he didn't accept. He was wearing a white dress only. And he was serving as assistant of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. The Prabhupada says that he didn't want to accept sannyas dress and carry danda, because as soon as he does that, thousands of people will fall on the ground and roll on the ground and offer obeisances. He will give so much of respect and he can become proud. So he didn't want to accept the external formalities. He just rejected it. And he was just wearing white and serving Mahaprabhu. So Prabhupada quotes that this anashita karma phalam. So one may just end the service like that without accepting the respect. But we are not in the platform of Swarup Damodar Prabhu to whimsically act. We can't do anything we want. So we are accepting some post and position given to us. But behind that, we have to always remember that this kind of accepting respect, actually he says, we have to offer the people respect in mind, which is more difficult than offering respect with your body. He says, you know, Krishna, Krishna yasya giritam manasadriyeta diksha atiche pranati picha bhajantanisha. If somebody is offering obeisances to you, if they are not initiated, then you have to offer the respect in the mind. Immediately you have to close your eyes and feel that I am touching that person's feet now. I am bowing down to him. So one is supposed to think in the mind like that. And offer the respects given to Prabhupada, the spiritual master. Like that. And when respect is not given, one should not become furious. One should not become angry. Why I am not respected? I am so and so. Why I am not respected? Although, you senior Vaishnava may correct a junior that this is the way you have to behave properly. Like once Ramapada Swami came to Bombay. So he was telling one lecture in Bhagavatam lecture. He went to some foreign temple and one devotee saw him and waved him. Vansakalp Maharaj, he was telling. Vansakalp Maharaj, he was telling. So he was just waving a hand. He said, this is a new style in ISKCON, he was telling. When they see Maharajas, sometimes they say, Vansakalp Maharaj. So first of all, he is not telling the full prayer. Vansha, Kalpa, Tarudvesha, Kripasandhu, Devacha, Pratanam, Pavanidhya, Vashnapina, Manumana. Along with it, he is supposed to bow down, touch his head to the ground. One is supposed to do that. Not that it is a Vedic custom and now we are not supposed to do. No. So he said, it's very, very bad. This is not the proper way. When you see a Maharaj, he said, one should bow down. Of course, he doesn't want respect for himself, but he wants to correct him. It's not a proper behavior that you just wave a hand and say, Vansha, Kalpa. Like we write Pambo, in our letters we write Pambo. You know what is Pambo? Please accept my humble obeisances. HDSP. All goes to Srila Prabhupada. We write like that. So, the same way one may, you know, not offer proper respects. For a period of, like, you know, for example, we come from outstation. So all devotees offer obeisances. That's a very good custom. And we should always do that. And over a period of time, familiarity may set in and we may think, okay, this devotee, I know him, he knows well. Prabhuji, you understand me, you know. That's Hare Krishna, I will say like this. Why you bow down and you bow down, I bow down. You waste your time, I waste my time. No. Once you follow the etiquettes, yeah. Otherwise, etiquettes are, then why are the etiquettes given by the acharyas? For so, whether not aware of spending time in that. The etiquettes enhance our mood towards devotees. We have to follow the etiquettes. Sometimes we always want to escape as much as possible from these things. So, we should not be attached to respect, to getting respect from people also. So these two things, lust and greed, I and mine, had to be overcome. That is why we always keep reminding one another that we are servants of Krishna. We are not the master. And Krishna is the proprietor of everything. Everything belongs to Krishna. Nothing belongs to me. We are just a servant. So this has to be repeatedly spoken and repeatedly remembered. Otherwise it's very difficult. You may, like I just now gave a lecture. As soon as I put my feet down from Vyasasana, I may give a strong chastisement to somebody. It's possible. Because it's very easy to speak, but when we practice, many of us we see that we miserably fail. Not once, second, third, fourth, many, many times. And every time we fail in realizing this true facts, we have to always understand how small I am. Krishna really makes us realize that you are not after all that great. You thought you are great, but you have this anattas in you, and you have to rectify them. And you can't just go along like this in your spiritual life, you know, spending day after day, month after month, year after year, going on like this, carrying these dirty things in your heart. You have to cleanse it, fight them. So Krishna keeps giving warning. So it's time. I have already crossed my time. Hare Krishna. Krantarakshamad Bhagavatam ki. Srila Prabhupada ki. Yau Bhaktabhinda ki.